Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Active Defense by Lynette Eason. What do you do when you can't escape danger? As a former field surgeon in Afghanistan, Heather Fontaine is used to life-or-death situations. She just didn't expect them to follow her home. When she finds someone has broken into her house while she was gone, she decides to hide out in a small town. But trouble is not far behind. As owner of his own security agency, Travis Walker has been secretly watching Heather for weeks and is aware of the pending danger. Travis and Heather must work together to figure out who wants her dead and why before it's too late. Their only solution? Active defense.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm glad you joined me. Today I'm chatting with Lynette Eason. She's the best-selling author of Collateral Damage and Acceptable Risk, and she's written a ton of series, and I'm really excited to have her on. So thanks for being on my show, Lynette.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You must get this question a lot, but why romantic suspense, and why did you start writing romantic suspense?
Yeah, I do get it a lot, and that's okay. When I was younger, I used to read all the time. Books were my friends, and I did the whole Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, you know, those kind of books as a kid, and then kind of progressed to Agatha Christie and Alfred Hitchcock and those kind of stories. And anyway, so when I decided to write that I wanted to write a book, it's kind of natural for me just to kind of segue into romantic suspense. I used to read a lot of the Harlequin stories, and so I was a suspense fan, but I was also a romance fan, and so combining the two was kind of fun. And my husband used to travel a lot for his job, and so I was kind of lonely, and I decided, you know, I'm just going to talk to the voices in my head here and try to write a story. So that's kind of how it all got started.
I'm laughing, Lynette, because we do have voices in our head.
Yes, we do.
We do. And I, too, grew up reading, you know, Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Trixie Belden,
oh,
the
yes.
Happy Hollisters, you know, all those fun books. I miss them. I should go back and reread them.
Yeah. I know.
In writing romantic suspense, I mean, people die. It happens. How do you research ways for people to die in your books? Do you find it difficult to find that information? Do you have sources? How do you kill someone in your books?
I guess it'd be bad to say killing somebody comes naturally, doesn't it? No.
That would be bad to say.
Only in writing, I promise. I am a member of, it's called a crime scene writer loop.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I have questions about death or dying or how to kill someone or anything like that, I simply go to that loop, type in my question, and it usually doesn't take very long to get an answer to that question. So I have a lot of resources that I can kind of tap into. I have some law enforcement friends that are very familiar with my weird writing brain and are very happy to answer my questions. So, you know, I just over the years, I just kind of built up that those relationships and that kind of thing. And, of course, you know, there's always Google.
Yeah.
When I get desperate, you know, if I can't get in touch with anybody. But, it's kind of scary to think what my search history is on my laptop. But that's okay. I either ask somebody or try to find it myself. And I usually get an answer one way or the other.
And do you have to, on the subject of killing people in your books, do you, I mean, are you looking for unusual ways, or are you looking for more just ways that really fit with your story? I mean, I feel like some writers try to find really weird ways to kill their characters. So which kind are you?
No, I try to find ways that fit the story. I've done a couple of unique, I guess, murders, but they fit the person doing the killing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, generally, I'm not in, I don't do the whole castle thing and have a very strange murder to figure out. So, I don't do that much.
Yeah.
I guess that's the simple answer.
No, I'm relieved. Okay, so what does your family think about your writing romantic suspense? Mine kind of think I'm a little strange, but...
of course, you know, my parents, they're like, what in the world did we give birth to? But, seriously, they're very supportive, and, you know, my mom is the one who introduced me to the mysteries, you know, in the first place, so she totally gets it. She thinks it's awesome and cool. And, of course, my husband, he's like, he tells everybody he sleeps with one eye open, but he really doesn't. they're super supportive and very proud of me and, you know, everything I do. So that it's really, really nice and a real blessing to have that support.
Yeah, I find it, my family's, they're pretty supportive. Pretty supportive too. Although I can't let my husband read my books before they're out because he doesn't read a lot of fiction. So he's and he's like a technical editor. So he's always commenting on things. I'm like, no. In fiction, we can do that. So.
Oh wow.
Yeah, you know, a little tension with that. But anyway, connecting with your readers. I mean, that must be so much fun. How do you stay in touch with your readers?
Yes, it is a lot of fun. One of the things that I'm big on is social media, I guess. I check it a few times a day. I try to see if anyone's left any comments or questions. A lot of times I'll post. I'm a part of the what we call the Romantic Suspense A-Team. And it's me and Diane Mills, Janice Kintori, and Lynn Blackburn, and... I'm forgetting somebody. one other person that's on there. But anyway, we're a group of, suspense writers, and we just kind of support each other in each other's work. So I'm on there. I try to post, pretty frequently on my own personal page, my author page, that kind of thing, and Twitter. And I'm on Instagram, but I got to be honest, I'm not a huge Instagram person. I like it. I just don't understand exactly how it works. So, and I haven't taken the time to figure it out. So if you try to contact me through Instagram, it's probably not going to be a good thing.
Yeah, I'm with you, Lynette. I don't get Instagram. I just don't. Now, my teenage daughters, they love Instagram. I think I'm not a visual thinker, so I think it's a lot of pictures and pretty posts, and that's not me. So don't look for me on Instagram.
Same here.
So you have a newsletter that your readers, that you send out to readers, or?
Oh, yeah, gosh, you know, I do have a newsletter. I try to send it out. I'm not, like, I don't bombard people with newsletters unless I have news, and so... you may hear from me, you know, a couple of times a year, or if I have a lot to share, I may do, you know, three or four times a year. But you can go to my website, which is just LynetteEason.com, and log in there and find me.
Good. My lots of ways to connect. And I
Hallie Bridgman, that was the one I forgot.
Good.
Okay, so
good.
I had to get her name in there in case she
hears
this, and they'll be like, you forgot about me.
No, no, I totally understand. I totally understand.
Okay, thank you.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, researching, you know, ways to kill people in your books. And mm-hmm. the next question about accuracy. I mean, I've read some of your books, and they are accurate portrayals of what, and I think that's important. It's important to me, and it's important to, I think, almost every, you know, writer worth their salt. So how do you kind of take that extra step to make sure that they're not just what you think should happen, but could really happen?
Well, like I said a little bit earlier, I have a lot of, context. If I have a question about something, I get online, email or text or whatever. I have two FBI agent buddies that read everything I write. And so they give me lots of wonderful feedback. And a lot of times, Lynette, you're going to have to fix this. Yeah. And it's also fiction. So as long as it's believable, of course, I want it to be as accurate as possible. But sometimes in fiction, you have to at least, what am I trying to say? If it's not like completely accurate, at least it gives the appearance of being accurate, and the reader can either doesn't know it's not accurate,
right?
Or
yeah.
They can suspend that disbelief for the sake of the story. However, you know, I really do try to keep it as accurate and as possible, but. Some things have to happen faster in the story than they would happen in real life. And the readers know this, at least hopefully most of them do, and they're very forgiving in that aspect, like, no, DNA doesn't come back in an hour, so.
Right.
but sometimes you just have to take a little bit of license and make things happen for the sake of the story to move along so the reader's not bored to death, sitting there waiting for DNA results to come back.
Right, right. Well, I would think that with everyone watching all these TV crime shows where it comes back in like 30 seconds, that your hour is probably believable.
for real, yeah.
Yeah, so we can thank the TV world for giving us a little more license, I think, in our books.
It's funny because on a lot of the crime scene writer loop, and I've attended the Writers Police Academy, and a lot of these places, they really, a lot of the conferences where there are actual, you know, law enforcement personnel teaching these classes, they get it. Some of them are writers too, and they're like, yeah, sometimes you have to kind of hurry things along a little bit to keep the plot moving, but they're really good about giving you feedback and giving you their personal information, saying, hey, if you have a question, I can help you make this work, give me a call, you know, that kind of thing. So that's really nice.
Yeah, it's good to have friends in law enforcement.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So we're almost out of time. We have time for one more question. So who's your favorite romantic suspense writer?
Mm-hmm. My favorite?
Yep, your favorite.
Oh, gosh. I got asked this question a lot, and it's very hard to pick just one. I mean, I have a whole list of favorites. Of course, you know, Terry Blackstock, Colleen Coble, Danny Petrie, Diane Mills, Dee Henderson, she was my mentor, so she's a favorite. I mean, it's really hard to narrow that down.
Yeah. Do you read a lot of, so you read a lot of romantic suspense?
I try to, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people that won't read it because they're afraid that they're going to inadvertently, like, commit plagiarism or something. And I was just like, I don't really worry about that. My stories are my stories. And so I love to sit back and just read a really great romantic suspense book. <so. clears throat> So, yeah, so I don't have that problem.
Good, good. Well, we are out of time. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners about your writing or your new book?
Well, Active Defense, I'm assuming that's the book we're talking about.
Yep, that's the book we're talking about.
Yeah, it comes out in January, I believe, and January 3rd was the date on it. And just, I really loved the story. I have to be honest, it was a pain writing it. It was writing it, you know, during this whole pandemic thing. And so it was, it had a lot of editing. Thank God for wonderful editors.
And, yes.
But I'm really, really pleased with how the story came out. And I think people are going to enjoy it.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for being on my show today, Lynette.
Thank you for having me. It was really great to connect with you.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking with Lynette Eason. She's a best-selling author, and you can listen to an excerpt from her new book, Active Defense, right after this interview.
Now an excerpt from Active Defense by Lynette Eason. Heather pulled into the garage and sat in her vehicle while the door lowered behind her. Apparently, this was going to be her night for sitting in her car and thinking. Spilling her guts to everyone, especially Brooke, had stirred up the memories and was going to make sleeping difficult, if not downright impossible. She had 3 shows she could watch. She could scroll mindlessly through social media, or she could go into work and see if anyone needed her. But she was tired and had a long day tomorrow, which would require rest. A headache started to form over her right eye, and she pressed against the spot. If she took her migraine medicine, she'd sleep until morning. But what if her stalker came back and she was too drugged to know? A shudder rippled through her. She took yet another moment to gather her thoughts and emotions while contemplating Brooke's observation that Heather didn't overreact, and the fact that she didn't like to be out of control of anything. Her life, her job, her emotions. Okay, so that was true. She pinched the bridge of her nose. Lord, I'm at a loss here. Things are spinning out of control and I don't like it. I know you know that. I need your help to figure out who this guy is, and I need some sense of control. Please. She paused. But if you can't give me control, give me the ability to deal with it, because you and I both know I have control issues. Denying that would be silly. The foster system had taught her no one was trustworthy, and she couldn't rely on anyone but herself. That trait was so fiercely ingrained in her that it even overwhelmed reason at times, like this one. And she'd let it bleed over into pushing Travis away when she wanted to pull him closer. A fierce rage welled from deep within. Rage at her father. At the foster system she'd hated. At life. Stunned at the wave of emotion, she swallowed it and did her best to focus on what she knew instead of how she felt. Fortunately, over the years, the army and her friends had shown her a different perspective than the voice in her head. They'd shown her how to rely on them and God. However, that didn't mean she didn't occasionally fall into her old habits or that expressing herself came easy. But she really did trust those in her inner circle, which was probably why she'd allowed herself to say so much tonight, putting herself out there, asking for help, and being vulnerable was hard, practically impossible for her. Which is why you chickened out, you big baby. Unable to find the words to express what she really wanted, she'd simply shut down. She chalked it up to being rattled from the race across the yard in the effort to confront the person now making her life one big basket of tension. which was who? The one person she thought it might be was still in prison. She'd checked that first thing. He had a parole hearing coming up in a month, and she planned to be there, just like all the other times, to remind the board why the man should not be released. And he'd glare at her while muttering dire things she'd suffer when he did get out. With a low growl of frustration, she shoved out of the SUV and slammed the door. The chill of the garage pressed in, and she shivered. At least whoever was watching her didn't seem to be dangerous. Yet. In the kitchen, she disarmed the security alarm, then rearmed the system. She placed her purse on the counter, and the emptiness pressed in on her. "I need to get a cat," she muttered. "Or a goldfish." With her hours at the hospital, a dog was out of the question, but a cat might be okay. Next to the kitchen was the laundry room, and she tossed her wet suit and towel in the dryer before heading to the cabinet for a mug. Coffee would help. Wouldn't help her sleep, but she wasn't going to be able to do that anytime soon, so why not? She paused as another chill passed over her. Why was it so cold in her house? With a frown, she walked into the hall and found the thermostat still set on 71. Warm enough to keep the house comfortable without being stuffy. The furnace was running. She felt the heat through a nearby duct. But the indoor temperature readout showed 65. Okay, then. Why wasn't the thermostat keeping up? Great. Just what she needed. She made a mental note to call someone to fix it in the morning. She'd just double up on blankets tonight. In the den, she stopped, goosebumps pebbling her skin, and not from the chill in the air. The lamp on the end table next to the sofa glowed with a soft light, inviting her to snuggle under a blanket and soak in the warmth and relaxation. So why was the hair on the back of her neck on end? She looked at the clothes on her love seat. They were wrong. She'd done the laundry yesterday, and while she'd been too tired to put them away, she'd folded them, neatly. Now, they were not so neat. Not exactly in disarray, but moved. Definitely moved. With dread curling in the pit of her stomach, she walked to the entrance of the hallway that led to the back of the house. Her eyes traveled to the end where her bedroom and guest room were. Her bedroom door was cracked, not wide open like she usually left it. Now the alarm crawled up her spine and settled at the base of her neck. Keeping her eyes on the crack, she walked backward until she had to round the corner into the den. She scanned the room once more while aiming for the kitchen. Wait a minute. Her alarm had still been armed. She'd had to punch in the code to turn it off. She'd also reset it. Relief swept over her. For a moment. It faded when she noticed the picture on the mantel was too close to the edge. Pressing a hand to her belly, trying to calm the rolling ball of nerves and rising fear, she strode to the kitchen, grabbed the box of cash from the top shelf over the glasses, then opened the second drawer. She withdrew the Glock, checked it, then dropped an extra magazine into her purse. Get out, get out, get out! Her second weapon was in the nightstand next to her bed. In the bedroom, she wasn't going into. More chills skittered up her spine. Call the cops and get out! Overreacting? Her gaze went back to the clothes on the sofa, the picture on the end table. She couldn't chance it. While the alarm system and common sense said one thing, her nerves and churning stomach said another, and she'd always had pretty good instincts. She kept the gun close and ready while she grabbed her purse. She'd call 911 when she was safely locked in her car. Once she had her phone in her hand, she turned, and her eyes landed on the picture on the refrigerator of her, Sarah, Ava, Cat, and Brooke. A little red dot had been drawn on each of their foreheads. Her blood stilled. Her breathing hitched. Heart pounding, Heather grabbed her purse and keys, kept a firm grip on her Glock, and headed for her garage.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.